We're dealing with sick people here.
The Game Plan with Dave Schultz rolls on live on the Sports Station, WNSP, online at WNSP.com, and on the WNSP app.
But the game rolls, the big dogs stay on the board.
You know, I'll settle for an ounce of weed.
Wow, you can't even be creepy when you try.
Wasn't really trying. I mean, I did a voice, which was weird, but...
A whole ounce, huh? What's the occasion, Clark?
Marathon recording session with England Dan and John Ford Coley.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, you want some Bennies to keep you awake?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, throw it in.
I'm not talking about moving in, and I don't want to change your life. But there's a warm wind blowing the stars around, and I'd really love to see you tonight.
That wasn't bad. Not good? I can do more. That was bad. All right, Dave Schultz, Stephen. Wednesday afternoon game plan. Yacht Rock edition. Brody Miller coming up from The Athletic. He'll talk LSU as they're hosting Auburn. We already talked to Justin Ferguson from The Athletic talking Auburn. Let's talk a little Saints. He's been breaking some news as of late. I'm surprised I can still reach him on the phone. I'm surprised he's still on Twitter. It's Brian Bienemy from ESPN NOLA. Brian, how are you?
Doing well, Dave. I'm also surprised I'm still on Twitter at this point.
Are you in like a undisclosed location?
Not yet, but I'm working my way there.
Yeah, the key is not yet. All right. Did the Saints miss out on one of these wide receivers? The Patriots, who win 33-0, go out and get Mohamed Sanu from the Falcons, and you had been mentioning about Emmanuel Sanders for a while, along with your buddy Benjamin Albright, that the Broncos were looking to move Emmanuel Sanders. The 49ers get him. What were the Saints in on any of those?
Yeah, they were actually trying, not for Mohamed Sanu, but definitely for Emmanuel Sanders. In fact, they've been chasing him now for a few years, but the compensation was just too much to give up for the Saints. Right now, they only have 5 picks going into the 2020 draft because they made some moves last year. Of course, there was the Eli Apple trade, and then, of course, they made the trade for Eric McCoy. I think that worked out pretty well for them, and that's why they don't have a 2nd and a 7th. With those 2 picks being gone, you only have 5 picks now, and I don't think they were able to give up 2 picks for a guy like Emmanuel Sanders, even though some will say, well, you know, they got a 5th-round pick back, whatever. You're still giving up 2 picks, and with the Saints only having 5, it doesn't really work out well.
All right, so you don't think that they would – I mean, they could be all in on this year. I'm not sure how important those draft picks are if you win the Super Bowl.
That's also true because, if you take the gamble, you win, of course, and then it all works out. But with the Saints having 24 free agents coming up available, changes a lot.
Right. All right. We're talking to Brian Bienemy from ESPN NOLA. Give us an update on Eli Apple's injury.
Hyperextended the knee. He was at practice today, so by all accounts, he looks like he's going to be able to give it a go. He's probably going to be limited a little bit this week in practice to kind of, maybe take some of that weight off the knee and that pressure off the knee, kind of maybe he takes a rep or 2 in team drills, but not the full rep, not the full amount of reps he'd normally take. So I think he'll be just fine to go. In fact, even after the game, his mom was out there tweeting to everybody that would pay attention that, he's still walking around and doing just fine. So I think he'll be good to go. And, of course, there's the bye week coming up after the Arizona game. So if you can get an early lead on Arizona, you get to rest some of you guys, you'll have the bye week, then you get ready for 4 out of 5 division opponents.
All right, here's the big news of the day. Drew Brees says he's planning on playing, says he's going to go into Sean Payton if Brees can be him. He needs to be me, and Sean's going to believe him. So apparently it looks like Drew Brees is making the call. How much do you expect him to play? Because I'd be shocked if Drew Brees is playing. He's not going to play 2 series, right? He's going to play the football game.
Yeah, if Drew's in, he's in. I mean, there's no mistake about that. And I think that it's actually a smart game plan because you don't want Drew going out there against Atlanta, which is probably going to be because of the rivalry, their version of a Super Bowl. They have nothing else to play for except to say we knocked off the Saints. So the last thing you want to do is put Drew out there against a division opponent and him not knowing the full range of what he can do with that thumb. Mm-hmm. I know he's been practicing. He's been throwing an NFL regulation football for about 2 weeks now. It's not the same as game action. And I think that's what they want to do now. They want to get him some game reps, let him see what happens when the pressure is on, when guys are around him, just in case he bangs at them, what happens if he's hit. You don't want to wait to Atlanta to find that information out because then you got to go back to Teddy. Get him in there, get him a week's worth of a game activity, put him on a bye week, get him ready for the following week.
talking to Brian Bieniemy, ESPN, NOLA. We just can't say enough about this defense, and I know the Patriots get all the credit, and the Bears seem to get a lot of credit. The Saints give up these garbage yards and points against Seattle, Chicago. They gave up a touchdown late against Tampa Bay, so maybe they don't rank where they should be defensively, but I think defensively they're playing as well as anybody in the NFL.
For me, I think they're going to end up a top five defense, and I don't think it's going to be right there at five. They're close now. I believe they're 11th in points allowed, and they're also top four in yards allowed. So they continue to stop the run the way they are, and they're basically making teams play one-handed because now you have to beat them with the pass, and that secondary right now is playing out of their minds. Eli Apple in a contract year playing like it. Marshawn Lattimore with a point to prove on how people kind of thought last year was a down year for him, and, of course, the first few games got torched up, beat up a little bit, so now he's playing like an all-pro. And then you have Von Bell, another guy playing for a contract, and Marcus Williams trying to exercise his demons. I think these guys are just playing hungry, and, of course, the D-line. I don't think there's a better D-line unit in football than the first six or seven guys the Saints are throwing out there, and they're only getting healthier. Second and third year for some of these guys in the system. They're just playing at a different level, and each game it gets better. If the offense could ever catch up and kind of, you know, give them a lead to play with, it's going to be lights out from here on out.
We're talking to Brian Bieniemy from ESPN NOLA. It seems like, I don't know, you know, baseball's this way. The NBA, maybe not quite as much. It may be at the top. But the NFL just seems very top-heavy, right? I mean, there's the Patriots in the AFC and then, like, three or four other, you know, good teams, like maybe Baltimore. Obviously, Kansas City is there when Mahomes is there, but he's out. The Bills are pretty good, but they don't have a great quarterback whatsoever. NFC, maybe a few more teams with the Saints. We're not sure about the 49ers because they haven't played anybody, but their defense is pretty good, and the Packers have Aaron Rodgers. But there's a lot of mediocrity here, right? I mean, how good are the Cowboys? How good are the Eagles? Vikings could be in that group as well, that they're pretty good. But it just seems like there's maybe, I don't know if there's 10 really good teams this year in the NFL. You might be at a half a dozen.
No, I totally agree with you there. I think a lot of what's going on right now is fool's gold and smoke and mirrors with some teams because it's like you said, the 49ers look really impressive until you pay attention to whom they played so far. Same thing can go on with your team over there in New England. I mean, they look like gangbusters, and I saw one guy say the New England Patriots defense is the best he's ever seen, and I'm just questioning when he started watching football because of a statement like that. I mean, I think the Steelers, of the old days, of course, there's the Legion of Boom, and I haven't even gotten to the 85 Bears or anybody right. else like that, right. you know, the 2000 right. Ravens. All those guys are into it. But I think right now it's exactly what you said. Maybe a little more than a handful of teams are actually capable of actually being considered really good teams. The Saints are one of those teams. And I think right now it's a race to say who's going to meet New England in the Super Bowl because they just added Mohamed Sanu, another pass catcher who can, right. you know, shown the ability to get open. Who's going to stop them with Mahomes being on the sideline? Teams that we thought would be there won't be. The Chargers won't be anywhere near sniffing the playoffs. Kansas City Chiefs are the only team that we actually thought had right. a chance. The only team that's really out there, I think, that can beat the Patriots is the Indianapolis Colts, and they're so, you know, they haven't really shown the ability to play big games yet. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens going down the stretch.
Yeah, very much so. We'll see. And I'll be an obnoxious Patriots fan. I don't think their offense, something's wrong with their offense. That's why they went and got Sanu. They only scored 9 points in the second half against the Jets. They struggled in the second half against the Jets the first time around. It's a little bit concerning, although we'll wait till the end of the year when they, depending on how they look. All right. Meanwhile, one of those sneaky teams that may be in that group of good but not great, those Carolina Panthers are like a game and a half behind the Saints. They'll make that game up, you know, next week when the Saints are off. Panthers were off, I guess, this past week. Are they going to move forward with Kyle Allen? And, you know, it could be interesting to see what happens if they get into the playoffs. You know, they got an MVP candidate in Christian McCaffrey.
They're also looking to add help right now, Dave. So they're also looking to add a pass catcher. And I think they've pretty much made their minds up. Cam Newton right now is healthy enough to give it a go. They're just sitting him another week or so. So I think right now Ron Rivera is almost with the let's ride the hot hand. Kyle Allen is the reason why we're in the position we're in. Cam Newton right now, I believe, is owed $21 million next year. And if they cut him, they'll save $19 million, only paying him $2 million. So I think right now, if I'm Cam Newton and I have a house in Carolina, it may be time to start, you know, I guess calling some real estate agents and putting my house up for sale because I don't see him lasting there in Carolina. And I just think at this point, Ron Rivera is trying to protect himself. He doesn't really care about Cam Newton. He's trying to protect himself. There's new ownership in Carolina. It could be a coaching change if he doesn't make it. And he's always one of those guys on the hot seat. It would not surprise me to see Kyle Allen be the quarterback the remainder of the season and Ron Rivera take his chances there versus saying we're going to put Cam in and mess up all the chemistry that we have going.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that moves forward. All right, you got any other breaking news you want to, you know, let me in on here?
I'm working right now to find out just how serious the Cincinnati Bengals are or if they're going to continue to be the Bengals. The Saints have been chasing Tyler Eifert, not A.J. Green, which most fans think that they are, but they've been chasing Tyler Eifert. He's more the lines of compensation in which they can afford to kind of give out and bring back in. So I'm trying to find out if the Cincinnati Bengals are serious or are they just being the Bengals that they've always been and they're basically just holding up everything because they can. Saints are still chasing a pass catcher. I'm going to try to find out who that guy is.
All right, Brian Bieniemy, ESPN NOLA. I appreciate it, my friend. Stay safe.
Take care,
right?
Dave. You got
it,
brother.
If you need help, you know, call somebody else.
Gotcha.
I'm there for you, brother. I'm there. All right. Kidding, obviously. All right. He did not. I. You know what? I still haven't heard from LSU, by the way. I presume that means I'm not going. I haven't even bothered calling the Saints. We may just be... Made a nice weekend at home. Third one in a row. I'm going home next week anyway. I'm going back to Syracuse. I got to find the gloves route. I got a pair of gloves for running, right? So you can use, you know, use your fingers. And then more gloves for when it's cold. How cold does it get here, Mobile?
It can get in the 30s.
All right.
It's happened.
I mean, do you I cleaned out my car. Found
I've got
the ice
pictures
scraper.
In
you
my
have
phone.
An ice scraper?
It snowed 2 years ago.
Oh, did the city come to a screeching halt?
Just about.
How much snow?
I mean, half an inch.
A trace?
Half an inch.
Half an inch is a lot, actually, down here. But we had a couple snow days and more. It's more ice days in Lafayette.
Yep.
All right.
Better you than me going back to the Northeast.
What's that?
Better you than me going back up to the Northeast.
Yeah. It's not going to be that bad. It's going to be the beginning of November. I don't think it's going to be that bad. Hope not. All right. All right. Stay with us. All right. We'll reset. Don't forget Brody Miller coming up bottom of the hour to talk LSU and Auburn. All right. Back after this, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
This is Brad Nessler, and you're listening to WNSP 105.5 in Mobile.
Welcome back to the McConnell Buick GMC Tide and Tiger Report, presented by Service First Bank. Call now at 694-1055 or take part on the WNSP app. Once again, Dave Schultz.
All right, Dave Schultz. Back alive at Spanish Fort. I'm going to make sure we got this right here, Root. I believe that we do. Well, that's old. That's old. We want to do trivia now for your chance to win two tickets to the SEC Championship and a Chick-fil-A sandwich. All right. The Astros find themselves down 2-0. Who was the last team to win the World Series after getting down 2-0? 694-1055. 694-1055. Root, you got the answer, right? I gave you the answer. I hope it's right. I'm pretty sure it's right from what I saw. The Astros are down 2-0. Who was the last team, can even give you a hint, that team lost the first 2 games at home as well. That's even a bonus. That's even a bonus. All right, and then we can go into a story about, well, we won't give you any more hints on that. All right, 694-1055, 694-1055. I am fascinated by what the Saints are doing here, although I know we're in the Tide and Tiger Report. We'll get back to that. Sean Kelly coming up talking LSU-Auburn, and then Brett Hudson talking Alabama. What the Saints are doing about we don't know who their starting quarterback is, and it almost feels like Drew Brees is begging to play, right? That somehow he's –
showing everybody that he's ready to play, and it seems odd that he would have to do that. Either he's ready to play or he's not ready to play. It didn't seem like there would be much of a decision on that at this point in time, but apparently we are still waiting. We also have some little bit of a trade in the NFL. Michael Bennett, who got suspended last week for the Patriots for mouthing off, got traded to the Cowboys for a seventh-round pick that could be improved to a sixth-round pick. So a little bit of a trade there as the Cowboys add some depth. And for apparently Michael Bennett wasn't fitting in New England. So it is what it is. All right. We got a winner. Not a PGA golfer, is he? We got Jason on the line. Jason, good afternoon. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're not New Zealandish, are you?
No, I'm not.
No, okay. Who was the last team to win the World Series down 2-0?
Well, unfortunately, because I'm a Braves fan, I remember this. I think it was the Yankees in 96.
Yeah, that's it. I was at game 6. Ended up running into the Braves in the bar after the ball game. If you can imagine that. Every single one was there except Bobby Cox, John Smoltz, and Andrew Jones. So it was a interesting situation with all my garb there, all my Yankee garb. All right, hey, we got to do these picks. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, you got to get 6 out of 7 at least, okay? Penn State at Michigan State.
Penn State.
All right, South Carolina at Tennessee.
South Carolina
at Tennessee.
Yep, South Carolina.
South Carolina. All right, TCU hosting Texas.
Texas.
All right, Notre Dame at Michigan.
I'm going to take Michigan.
Oh, wow. All right, go blue. Seattle at Atlanta.
Seattle.
The Chargers at Chicago.
Oh, I guess if at Chicago, I guess I'll take Chicago.
Okay, and Kansas City hosting Green Bay.
I'll take Green Bay.
All right, so let's see, Penn State, South Carolina, Texas, Michigan, Seattle, Chicago, and Green Bay. Jason Day, best of luck. Thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Outstanding. The Yankees were the first team to do it. They did it against the Dodgers in 78. I think the Dodgers did it to them in 81. I think the Red Sox did it in 86. And the Yankees are the most recent team to do it, down 0-2 in the World Series. The Red Sox, you know, don't remind me about that. We're down 0-3 in the 2004 American League Championship Series. Yuck. All right, let's take a timeout. Sean Kelly is on the call, the national radio call, for LSU and Auburn. We'll get his take. Also, maybe a little Pelicans thrown in there. The former radio broadcaster for the New Orleans Pelicans. But it'll mostly be on LSU-Auburn. He's coming up next. Stay with us. It's a Tide and Tiger Report. By McConnell Buick GMC, powered by Service First Bank. We're live from Spanish Fort. Spanish Fort taking on Gulf Shores later on tonight. Back after this, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Welcome back to the McConnell Buick GMC Tide and Tiger Report, presented by Service First Bank. Call now at 694-1055 or take part on the WNSP app. Once again, Dave Schultz.
All right, we're back. We're live at Spanish Fort. The Toros hosting the Dolphins from Gulf Shores tonight. All the football games moved up a day, and we'll have the action here beginning at 6:50. Pigskin Pete Pepsi preview show coming up at 6 o'clock right after this. But we roll on with a McConnell Buick GMC Tide and Tiger report powered by Service First Bank. It's my honor and privilege to bring on our next guest. He's got the call on ESPN Radio for LSU and Auburn, the former voice of the New Orleans Pelicans. It's Sean Kelly. Sean, thanks so much for hopping on. How have you been?
I've been well. How about you, Dave?
We're doing okay in the afternoons. It's a little easier to do an afternoon show than 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. In the mornings.
I like being your guest in the afternoon more, too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But you were great all the time getting up, you know, after a game. That was outstanding. All right, you're taking this from a national perspective. I've been talking to people that may be slightly biased based on the teams they cover. What are you looking forward to in this LSU-Auburn football game?
Well, this will be my second time seeing Auburn. I had them in that thriller in Arlington earlier this year when they won with 9 seconds to go and learned a little bit about Auburn in a way that I didn't expect with regard to, I already knew about that defensive front. I wanted to learn more about Bo Nix, and my first half impression of him that game was, wow, it's going to be a long year. And then in the second half, Bo Nix started to come into his own a little bit and found himself winning the game with the help of Seth Williams, you know, there at the buzzer, basically. Since then, all Auburn has done is basically take care of their business except for a tough road game at Florida. And so that sets up a top 10 matchup this week. And lo and behold, if Auburn wins, they will have the same record in the division as LSU and will find themselves still squarely in the conversation for a possible trip to Atlanta. So those are the things that kind of stick out with me with regard to Auburn. And they've stayed relatively healthy except for the running back. And so therefore, I think they present a significant challenge to the other Tigers this weekend.
It's going to be interesting because Auburn likes to run the football, and yet defenses, and maybe it's because they've been behind so often, but defenses have rather gashed the LSU passing defense. They got a couple of, well, one young corner, actually another young corner, and Christian Fulton, who's highly touted to come out in the draft. But it'll be interesting to see, does Auburn try and throw it against what has been a susceptible LSU defense?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Certainly leading up to LSU's game against Florida 2 weeks ago, they were really vulnerable, especially over the middle. They tightened that up against the Gators. They did even better against a lesser opponent, Mississippi State, last week. But it's interesting watching that other young corner, that true freshman, Derek Stingley, because, you know, he leads the conference now in passes defended. He's been targeted 41 times this year. 19 receptions, 2 touchdowns, a lot. But here as he's progressed, all of a sudden last week, no targets. They did not want to throw to his side of the field. So that's interesting to watch. So I think the fact that LSU has gotten more healthy up front has helped that defensive secondary and maybe has made them less wobbly there in the secondary against the pass. So I wouldn't read too much into the numbers overall for the season. I'd look more at recent trends against LSU secondary than the whole thing.
All right. And what about Auburn's ability to be able to run the football, because that's what they like to do?
Well, obviously, with Booby out, that's a big loss. But I like what I saw, you know, recently with Cam Martin. He had 84 yards on 10 carries in the last game, and they've kind of done this by committee. DJ Williams had 11 carries. No one's had that big chunk play yet for them out of that running game, but yet when you're starting all seniors across your offensive line, it makes life a little easier for younger or less experienced running backs. So are they more powerful with Booby? Yes, but at the same time, they've got these running backs that are now rotating in, and fresh legs may not be a bad thing either. I think it's going to be all true important also for that Auburn run game to eat up a little clock. LSU loves to score and score in a hurry. I think their average scoring drive, David, is like 2 minutes and 15 seconds. So they've got to be able to play some clock here a little bit with that run game on the Auburn side, too.
We're talking to Sean Kelly. He's got the call of LSU-Auburn on ESPN this weekend. All right, so that's interesting because we saw, you know, last week with the Saints kind of tiring out the Bears' defense because they're a little bit more methodical. It'll be an interesting deal. Is Auburn really going to be tired, or do they get demoralized if they're, you know, giving up a bunch of points, which they really haven't this year? They gave up 24 to Florida, and a lot of that was on one play, you know, one play to break the game open at the end. Because, like you said, Auburn, you know, LSU doesn't go up and down the field methodically. They do it quickly compared to Auburn, who may be a little bit more methodical and play the game with the clock. It'll be interesting to see how Auburn reacts if they do give up quick scores because they're not going to be tired.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that it's dangerous for Auburn to get into a track meet here with an LSU team that is yet to not score when going into the red zone. They have scored on every single trip to the red zone this season. The only quarter that they haven't scored in was the fourth quarter last week when they already had 36 on the board. But, as you mentioned, Auburn has not allowed more than 24 points in a game. They're only one of 10 teams to do that here in the country. Auburn's also been very good about forcing turnovers, and that's kind of a Kevin Steele thing. Let's recognize that. I think that two things play into this. If they can take a possession or two away from LSU with a takeaway, and also maybe be the first team all season to cause LSU to stub their toe in the red zone, maybe that's where we see Auburn get an advantage in this game. And look, the other thing is serious history here. Let's not forget that, like, the last several meetings have been decided by a total of, I think, 11 points. You know, last year's game comes down to the last play. For whatever reason, these two teams don't like to decide anything until the final minute of the game.
Now, in Auburn's ball game against Florida, I chalked that up as freshmanitis for Bo Nix. He was just off, big crowd, on the road, big ball game. Really even had a chance, you know, a good pass to Williams that makes it a 20-17 ball game. Instead, they don't score. He throws an interception, and it spiraled out of control from there. How can the freshmen stay calm in, you know, in Death Valley and Baton Rouge?
Well, that's you know, that's the thing. I think there were some comments made earlier in the week that will walk back a little bit about the atmosphere. You know, Bo has not played in a place like Tiger Stadium. You know the place well, and I understand the swamp is what it is, and Florida's defense was the best that he had seen all season. This is a little bit of trouble here for a young player like Bo Nix. Now, I will say this. He didn't shy away from the moment on national television to start the season, first freshman to start, like, since the 40s. And, yes, like I said earlier in our visit here, he looked really bad in the first half, but then he kind of rose to the occasion and made the big play. He just has to take care of the football, and they have to be good about managing what they ask him to do. He hasn't thrown for a real good completion percentage, but he seems to do just enough, and I think that using his legs is a good thing too. And he has the ability to do that. I'm not so sure I like this whole rotation with Joey Gatewood a little bit. I think they need to put it in Bo's hands, and he needs to know that it's his to win or lose. But, yeah, use your legs a little bit and just manage it. Manage it, because it will be tough and it will be loud. It won't be Saturday night in Death Valley, but it'll be close enough.
Let's wrap it up here a little bit with Sean Kelly's on the call for LSU Auburn. I still don't know if I know of a player who has improved as much from one year to the next as Joe Burrow. It has been a transcending change.
Well, you know, I think you could argue that he's the leading contender for the Heisman right now. And sometimes if you put the right talent with the right system, you get this. You know, it's remarkable. He leads the nation in completion percentage. David, he hasn't thrown an interception in the red zone. He has 18 touchdowns, zippo interceptions in the red zone. That's just managing the game properly, and he's got weapons, because all of a sudden Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, and it looks like Terrace Marshall's coming back this week for LSU. He's got all kinds of guys to throw to, and 19 different players on that team have at least one reception this year. It's because Joe Burrow knows this offense now and this passing game that Joe Brady has brought with him from the New Orleans Saints. So I'm not so sure it's this great improvement for an individual player. It may be the fact that he's a graduate student now and is finally in the system that suits him best. He now looks like a guy who can take it to the next level, and I'd be shocked if he's not in the top three with regard to the Heisman. And you could argue that Joe Burrow is, between the way he's played and the way he's led, as LSU in a position to be the number one team of the country if they can survive Auburn this week.
All right, one more question. First time in a long time you weren't calling the season opener for the New Orleans Pelicans. Did you miss it?
Weird. It was really weird the other night. first time in, what, a decade and a half. So I watched the game. I was bouncing between that and the World Series a little bit. And I won't have my first NBA assignment until Christmas, so I'm a little out of my water here, but enjoying the transition.
All right, well, we'll see if that's a coincidence that you and Zion make your 2019-2020 debut on the same day. Sean Kelly, have a great call. Enjoy LSU and Auburn, and I always appreciate your time. I'll have you back on soon.
All right, Dave, thank you. Take care.
All right, Sean Kelly, he's got the call of LSU and Auburn. It should be a well of a football game. All right, we got one more spot, and we are holding it. All right. Brett Hudson from TideSports.com and the Tuscaloosa News. All right, we'll ask him if Tua's brother's going to play. See if I get the same reaction out of him that Saban gave. Maybe it was him who asked the question. Back after this on the Tide and Tiger Report, powered by McConnell Buick GMC and Service First Bank. Back after this, live from Spanish Fort. Teams are on the field. Getting loose, Spanish Fort and Gulf Shores, Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.
Welcome back to the McConnell Buick GMC Tide and Tiger Report, presented by Service First Bank. Call now at 694-1055 or take part on the WNSP app. Once again, Dave Schultz.
All right. Just about wrapped up here at Spanish Fort, getting ready for Spanish Fort and Gulf Shores. It's the Tide and Tiger Report, sponsored by McConnell Buick GMC and powered by Service First Bank. Let's talk a little Alabama and Arkansas with our buddy Brett Hudson from the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Brett, thanks for hopping on. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
Doing okay. All right. How much is Tungvaluwa's to his brother going to play on Saturday?
Well, it depends on. Yeah, that was a nice little mini rant from Saban last night. Yeah, it depends on. Depends on how much of the game is in hand, according to Mac Jones and company. I mean, to put it the way it normally is. I mean, Tua Tagovailoa is the backup quarterback this week. So in whatever situation you would have seen Mac Jones enter this game, if Tua were healthy, it's a situation you would see Talia enter this game with Mac healthy. So if they do what Vegas expects them to do, which is win this game by 34, 35 points, you would assume that most of that margin is going to be compiled in the first 45-ish minutes of the game. And I imagine you'll see Talia Tagovailoa get a couple of possessions in the fourth quarter. And that's a good thing for him, because with this four-game redshirt rule, you most often see those play out in those just nonsense non-conference games where, I mean, yes, they're getting college football reps and they're important and they're useful, but they're not nearly as useful as, in theory, getting two possessions against Arkansas would be, because, yes, Arkansas is bad, but they still, on average, are going to have a better defensive athlete and a general defensive scheme at a higher level than the New Mexico States and the Western Carolinas of the world. So if Talia Tagovailoa does get a couple of possessions in this Arkansas game, it would be useful for his development, just because that's something that I would imagine most four-game redshirt rule guys don't get in their redshirt season.
You don't think Nick Saban would keep with Mac Jones just to spite everybody, do you?
No, because there is a very real possibility that either this ankle thing of Tua's become a bigger problem than we expect it to, or as happened last year, his injury issues linger, and we're going to have to see more of Mac Jones throughout the course of the season. So I would imagine the objective is to get this game in hand and get Mac Jones out of the game as quickly as possible, just because he is QB2, and as the old football cliche goes, he's one snap away from becoming the QB1 for a season that, I mean, we're in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. We all know the championship standard here, and that the season is all on, with all eyes on the national championship. So Mac Jones is one snap away from being the quarterback that's tasked with leading that charge, and I would imagine they will treat him accordingly. I guess it is possible that you see Mac Jones stay in the game later than you would probably see Tua in there, just again to get Mac more experience. But there's also the obvious factor that Tua Tagovailoa could also benefit from that experience.
Talking to Brett Hudson from the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. All right, so that leads into my question, you know, the championship expectations. Does this team still expect to win a championship with Mac Jones as their quarterback?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I don't think that's going to change for anything at this point. Now, I mean, they obviously expect Tua Tagovailoa to be back in time for the LSU game and for every game thereafter. So they're not expecting to have to go win a championship with Mac Jones, but if those are the cards they're dealt later in the season, then that will still remain the expectation. They obviously, this offense has been pretty explosive to the point that Tua Tagovailoa could still come out of it, and I don't think it's going to cripple the offense. And then the defense is showing some signs of improvement week over week, so they hope that those things can come together to create a championship season without Tua Tagovailoa if they have to go that way. But that's to the root of your question. That's always going to be the standard here. I don't see that changing as long as Nicholas Saban is in the head coach office.
Right. Talking to Brett Hudson, TideSports.com, Tuscaloosa News. All right, so we had Scott Hunter on, as we do every Tuesday, talking Alabama football, the former Alabama quarterback, and he believes that you need to, you know, Mac Jones needs to get ready, not only to try and beat Arkansas, but he needs to get ready to play against LSU. He thinks this is going to be the Mac Jones show by slinging it around a lot, so he's ready to do what he has to do against the LSU Tigers.
I don't know about that. I mean, everything coming out of Alabama suggests that that Tua Tagovailoa will at least be able to play in the LSU game, because the timeline of this is perfect with that open week before LSU and then getting an Arkansas team the week before that, where I'm going to commit some rat poison here. You don't need Tua Tagovailoa to beat Arkansas straight up, just based on the talent discrepancy between the two. So I still anticipate Tua to play against LSU. Is it going to be 100% Tua? I don't think anybody but Tua and the members of that locker room are going to know that until they wake up on Saturday morning when that game kicks off at 2:30 in Tuscaloosa. I understand the pessimism, especially when you put it in the context of last year and how Tua's ankle and his injuries as a whole were something that kind of followed him and nagged him throughout the course of the season through that SEC championship game that he had to miss the second half of. So I understand the pessimism, but I don't have any reason to buy into it at this point in time. Now, if there's a setback in his rehabilitation over the open week or the LSU week, then we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it. But as we're speaking on Thursday afternoon of Arkansas week, I still expect Tua to play against LSU.
All right, we've got a minute more with Brett Hudson. As I just forgot my question. Boy, that really stinks. Brett Hudson with the TideSports.com and Tuscaloosa News. Is this one of those weeks that Nick Saban is maybe harder on his team and can use the examples of, you know, Georgia and South Carolina and Illinois and Wisconsin to get them to stay focused?
Yeah, he definitely used those examples in the past, and I imagine he'll use them again. But speaking of setting examples, I thought it was interesting that he told the story of the 2019 choosing to take a charter to their Rose Bowl game in Pasadena, where they ultimately beat Texas for the national title. They chose to take the charter out there as opposed to
taking individual flights in a system where they could have profited hundreds of dollars off of that. You can read more about that on TideSports.com. It was the lead of the notebook from last night. So find a notebook, you can read more about it. But I thought it was interesting that he told that anecdote at that point in time, because he used it as an example of where selfless tendencies and selfless decision-making can lead to greater things for not only yourself but for your teammates down the road. So, you know, I think Alabama fans are used to Nick Saban press conferences not being moments to address the media, but moments to address his team through the media. And I think it was not an accident that Nick Saban chose to share that particular anecdote about selflessness from the 2019. Now, part of that is because they're being reunited this weekend. It's their 10-year anniversary. But again, these are opportunities that Nick Saban uses to communicate messages to his team, and I refuse to believe that's an accident.
All right, Brett Hudson, Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you for listening to the McConnell Buick GMC Tide and Tiger Report, powered by Service First Bank. We got the Pigskin Preview coming up at 6 o'clock with Pigskin Pete. Myself and Beta Brown will have the call of Gulf Shores and Spanish Fort coming up at 6:50. You're listening to Sports Radio 105.5 WNSP.